We're waiting for Senator Seekins, but let's go ahead and start. This is the first meeting of the Special Committee on University Oversight. I'm pleased that we can all get together today to hear the President of the University speak. With us today, Senator, on my left, Senator Bundy, Senator Elton, Senator Hoffman, Senator Ben Stevens, Senator Tom Wagoner, and myself, Stevens. And also we have joining us Senator Wilkin. Mr. President, we're very pleased you're here today and be glad to have you come up and speak to us on the state of the university.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mark Hamilton. I'm the president of the University of Alaska System.
And I'm sorry, sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to acknowledge the presence of Senator Seekin here.
Thank you. Well, sir, I come before you today looking for the guidance of this committee. You ought to look at the university. We constitute a very significant amount of expenditure. I can tell you that many have looked and many do look at the university. It's a formidable institution to oversight and investigate and observe. I'll give you an example of Commonwealth North, a report that we'd certainly like you to take a look at. Commonwealth North had some need to investigate the university. They spent 28 weeks meeting once a week to explore the university and to answer their questions, some of which were rumors and myths that they wanted to have resolved, and those were resolved. The conclusions of their study, and it's worth reading, where the University of Alaska cannot fulfill its mission without adequate resources. For years, peer institutions enjoyed annual state appropriation increases while U of A declined. Obviously, they're referring to the 90s. University of Alaska must increase its purchasing power. They said as well, the study group was impressed by the range and quality of university programs and people. Efforts to inform and engage Alaskans in this vital institution must increase and continue to be enhanced. And there are, it's quite a document with many, many, many more observations. This body sponsored most recently a legislative audit, which cost you $570,000 just on the legislative side. I assure you the university spent much more time in kind responding to that audit, which again we welcomed. By the way, the cooperation and professionalism of the legislative audit team thoroughly impressed the university and my folks who had the opportunity to work with them. Their report in very short order, and again a very significant document that you might want to look at. But in the area that I think all of us are especially concerned about with audits is, how did they do since the last time we saw you? The short answer is the university has either resolved or made significant progress on all five of the recommendations of the previous audit. One was on the university's information system. The university's information system have changed since the prior audit. They have dramatically changed since the prior audit. Data was accessible and determined to be accurate. In terms of auxiliary cost policies, which had been recommendation 5 of a 1993 audit, they have been also have been substantially resolved. Policies were implemented, procedures are being followed, which allows management to know the revenues and expenditures related to a given auxiliary operation. And finally, progress has been made in implementing prior recommendations 2 through 4, which dealt with the enforcement of policies and procedures over faculty evaluations, sabbaticals, faculty overloads, and additional assignments. Again, a very, very good report. As well, the university stands for accreditation visits, for the major administrative units, as well as accreditation visits for each of many, many of our departments, where external agencies evaluate the university's quality and capability to deliver the courses which meet the standards for the degrees that are handed out. Additionally, internally, often from direction from the Board of Regents, the university has engaged the services of experts and consultants from around the nation in academia to study. I'll just list a couple of them. There are many, many, and again, we have all of these data are available for you. Status and future direction of University of Alaska engineering programs. We are very, very much aware that we need more engineers if we're going to undertake a significant construction here in the next several years. Report on academic decision making, review of research compliance, findings and recommendations on human resource management, external review of information technology, and pages that can be looked at in that area. This body has asked us, and since abandoned the effort statewide, but you delivered to us many years ago now, just as I first got in the position of university president, some missions and measures, where you really laid out, it was the kind of guidance that I would hope we get from this committee ultimately, laid out, here are some of the things that we think you ought to be working at. Even though this body has chosen not to pursue those across the state, tremendous amount of effort involved in tracking them, and I guess eventually people decided that the effort was not worth the insight. However, we have continued to track every single one of those and have added to them because I think this body was correct historically that these are the things that people care about. We have as well a very important and very, very new assessment of the university done by the McDowell Group, which surveyed telephonically a sample group of more than 1,000 Alaskans that has ended with some very, very encouraging data for the university. Some of it much a change from what some of you recall. 9 out of 10 Alaskans would encourage or strongly encourage their child to go to the University of Alaska. There are 5 times as many people in Alaska who believe that the quality of the university is as good as or better than the lower 48. And again, those of you with a history here understand that that is progress that has overcome some unfortunate and erroneous conclusions and rumors that abounded in the past. Give you one other thought, because it's a data point that I would just hate for anyone not to hear. We established a university savings plan. It is nationwide, run by huge corporations, that allows investment for the purpose of going to college. That particular account that was completely constructed by Jim Lynch, one of our employees, absolutely a nationally recognized expert on this kind of thing, has in its very short lifespan garnered $2 billion worth of investments. About $72 million of those come from the state of Alaska. And here's the number I really want you to understand in terms of looking at the future of this state, which I know you're all very, very interested in. Of the money invested from Alaska, 41.8% of it came from households who reported an annual income of under $50,000. This is extraordinary. Nationwide, those households would typically report a number in the mid-teens. So, in essence, three times as many Alaskans of very modest means have decided that they want to invest so that their children can go to the University of Alaska. It's a very, very powerful vote. I'll give you one other number from the McDowell report. 97% of the individuals surveyed who had received a degree or certificate from the university said they were pleased or very pleased with the education they had received. I would note that the other 3% call me, but you deal with the same sort of things. So I offer these kinds of efforts of people who have looked in the past. The amount of data available at the university is absolutely enormous. And when I tell you I welcome your questions, your directions, let's discover what you want, and we'll produce that. There's a reason for that. Universities have a single Achilles heel. People across this country for 40 years have said, I love the university, but they're not accountable. Accountability is an absolute watchword of my administration, and it is the reason that universities are so measured by themselves, externally, accreditation reviews, legislative audits, public opinion surveys, the kind of thing we'd see with Commonwealth North, an interested and important quasi-political body. They want to know. They want to answer that question. We are absolutely prepared to answer that question, but I certainly would like your direction as to what this committee would hope to investigate and hope to learn about in the meetings ahead. And Mr. Chairman, that would end my prepared remarks, but I'm certainly prepared to copy.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I appreciate your comments. I think you find an enormous amount of support around this table for what the university is doing, and certainly the intention of this oversight committee is not critical, but honest, and to look at both the tremendous achievements of the university as well as those areas that we need to be looking at. So, just so you'll have a heads up, I have contacted the National Council on State Legislatures, and they will be delivering a presentation to us in the near future to talk about how we compare with other universities throughout the nation. And out of that also may come some work with the national report called on higher education from the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education. I'm sure you're familiar with that. And there's some very good things in that about the university, some successes, certainly in terms of preparation of our students and participation, but some other areas that I'd be particularly interested in looking at, such as affordability and completion of degrees and benefits to the state, all things I know you deal with every day. And another area that I'm sure will be a great interest to this committee would be the Scholars Program, and anticipated legislation from the governor to increase the scope of that program. That'll be extreme importance to us. So any questions or comments, Senator Bundy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. President. I was taken by some recent articles in the paper about, I guess, the dumbing down of a university degree. You know, we had to passed legislation to make sure a high school diploma meant functional literacy. I'm hoping we don't have to go there with the university, and I would be interested in knowing what the university reaction to this charge. They weren't specifically focusing on University of Alaska. This was kind of a generalization, but interested in knowing if you share that concern and what might be done to deal with it.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I think probably the easiest way to address that initially, I really do look for comparative data that keep me from being associated as a cheerleader for the university. I'm not a cheerleader. I'm an advocate because I manage the university, and I'm aware that it is not perfect. So when I want to look at the university and see how it's progressing, I want to look for what does some external agency think about it. So the first place I would look for dumbing down, frankly, is suggested by one of the missions and measures that we've looked about. How does the university compare on national standardized licensure or accreditation missions to the individual? So the individual takes a test. It is compared to a national average. We cover several of them in the missions and measures, but just let me rehearse the major numbers for it. We take 21 of those tests that are nationally comparable. We exceed the national average on 18 of the 21. And just like you with your child's report card, we're interested in what's wrong with the other three. I do understand that. And we're about the business of looking at that. We take 39 other certifications that don't have national comparisons. What I know about those is on 24 of them, we have 100% pass rate, so at least we're tied. And again, it's looking at why are we not meeting the standard on whatever it happens to be, a CPA exam, an engineering exam, or whatever it happens to be. So externally, our folks are competing extraordinarily well. Acceptance to graduate school is a good indication. Extraordinary success as our individuals in the university have the opportunity to be really so close to research opportunities that abound that would not be available. I'm not sure about the philosophy of the dumbing down. If the tests are right, if the tests haven't been dumbed down, we certainly are doing quite well. And comparatively, exceeding the national average on 18 of 21 is a pretty darn good start.
Senator Money, another poll?
Well, and another issue there, somewhere over here, I have a file of people have contacted me. For some reason, they think that would be a good conduit, I guess. But in any case, about some personnel issues. The most recent one was somebody who, I guess to oversimplify it, was exiled to Dillingham. He feels in retribution for some things he's done. This is an open meeting. I know there's limits to what you can discuss on personnel issues. There's another person who was denied tenure over a dispute. But I think we'd like it in some venue to have more information, or I would at least, on issues like that.
All right.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. And maybe just a comment on that. I too have received several questions about promotion and tenure and all those sorts of issues. And I think that it's probably beyond the purview of this oversight committee. Though certainly, Senator Bundy raises some good questions. But what I'd be interested in knowing, the only thing I'd be interested in knowing is. Is there an appeal process for this particular individual that we received a question from? And I'm sure there is. And if there is, certainly it would be not our job to serve as that appeal process. Senator Wagner.
I just want to go back. You made, during your presentation, President Hamilton, you made the remark, you used 41%.
41.8, yes, sir.
42.8, almost 42%. Is that a factor due to the higher cost of higher education now? In other words, more people are less able to afford to send their children elsewhere, and would that be reflected in this, or is that a reflection around the nation? Because higher education is becoming more and more expensive, so I would think that would have some bearing on that percentage of students staying home.
Well, through the chair, Senator Wagner, we are frankly only guessing at the cause and effect of some of these things. When you see a data point exceed the national average by 300%, I think it's fair to leap to the conclusion that what we really have in Alaska are a number of individuals, because I'm going to make, again, a very generalized statement. I suggest that individuals who report an annual household income of under $50,000 are probably not led by college graduates. That would be my guess. If that's the case, we have a very important message being sent here by the state that says that people who have not gone to college have now begun to understand the worth of going. Let me give you a data point that I think you and I have shared before. That's very important to understand the difference in college from the time I went. And there are many. I mean, some of them are quite remarkable, not the least of which I've just discovered. I mean, it's been there for years, but I've just discovered. When I went to school, people worked in construction to get money to go to college. Now, at our community-based campuses, we are delivering programs in construction math that prepare people to enter the apprenticeship program in our unions. There's really been this kind of an inversion. They are actually coming to us for math skills. We actually have a course called Math for the Trades because it ends up being a very real shortfall. But a data point that's really fascinating. In 1950, 20% of the jobs in America required a four-year degree. In 2006, that number has leapt to 23%. And you go, why is the university president telling you that there's been virtually no growth in the requirement for four-year degrees? It's because what has leapt beyond imagination are the percentage of jobs that require post-secondary education. It is now in excess of 80%. So one of the things I think we see here is the recognition, even from individuals who have not themselves gotten a college degree, to say to their son or their daughter, I need to make the opportunity of going to college available to you, because it's exactly that I tell all the high school students I talk to. I'm going to get you sooner or later. You can come directly out of high school and go in, or you're going to find a point in your career where you're going to need an additional skill set in order to compete, and you will come to your university. Whether or not you want to be a construction worker, certainly if you want to be a construction manager, if you want to be a pipe fitter, and you didn't do real well in trigonometry, or you didn't take the course because it wasn't offered, they demand trigonometry and prefer calculus to enter the 8,000-hour apprenticeship program. So the university is involved in more people's future than the kinds of, well, I'm in the top X percent of the class and I want to go. 80% of individuals who ultimately work will come through us.
Thank you, Mr. President. Further questions, comments? Senator Bundy.
Thank you, and I'm really pleased to hear that, because I've heard it from business industry, they don't need engineers as often as they need someone with a certificate.
No question.
And sounds like a community college mission to me, but then maybe that was just a cheap shot of my part. A subject that you and I have discussed before is with these increased numbers, we're getting quantity, but there's some concern about quality and the remediation that you have to do. It's still very expensive. What are the current numbers on what is it costing and the percentages of folks that are taking remediation?
I can give you the gross numbers. We have about 40% of our student body that requires some form of remediation. I don't have the cost numbers at the top of my head, but I promise you we have them. Don't be fooled by that statistic in either direction. That is about the national average for remediation. But ours is very, very different. I mean, I would not hide behind that apparent similarity. Because in most cases, the remediation involves a semester or two semesters in a single course. Our remediation efforts very often require a couple of years of remediation, taking an even 050 kind of a course to get up to a 100 level course to ultimately take the 111 that the properly prepared freshman might have entered. So it's an issue. I have a personal belief about the remediation program, both in its, I guess, philosophically for its need, and ultimately one that's maybe even philosophical about its execution. The need for it has been around for a very, very long time. The first remediation we ever saw was at Harvard in the late 1600s, when they decided that individuals who were not fluent in Latin and Greek, while they certainly could never be clergy, might be remediated to the point that they could be doctors and lawyers. That began a characteristic of remediation that has remained the same through the Industrial Revolution, through the GI Bill, through the Civil Rights Movement, that has always been characterized by two qualities. One, greater inclusion, and number two, a greater scope of university fields and products. So the need of it, it seems to me, is founded on very admirable goals and aims. I'm not convinced that we have figured out the way to do this, and it's something that I'm working with my faculty to discover. I've challenged them with the following thought, that you, having had experiences in the system, may have some comments and guidance on that. I'd be pleased to look at. Remediation at the college level, because it is characterized by one single course or something, is typically executed by giving a person a remediation course that follows the kind of rhythm of the rest of the courses, so they can sort of remain with the flow. So they're getting a remedial math course, 50 minutes on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, or 90 minutes on Tuesday and Thursday, so they can get along and move that into their schedule. Our results are just not acceptable. But we're involved in another remediation program that I think we've mischaracterized for years. I think this is at least my hypothesis here. That's called the GED program. These are the same individuals who either had a poor or incomplete high school experience, who come back to us for the GED, go through that course. At the end, they take an exam, which frankly is more exacting than our current exam in high school that we have in the state. And they succeed remarkably well. In the past, we have ascribed that success rate to, well, they're more mature. They've been out there, they understand the need for it, and so they're really involved in this sort of thing. What we haven't considered is the pedagogy of that remediation, which tends to be a lot more like high school. You're going to sit in the class and take 3.5 hours of math, and then in the afternoon you take 3.5 hours of English. We're going to explore that to see. It's a program. See, the students don't want to get involved in that. I want to be in college. We're looking at a program that I've called the academic red shirt. We have all Americans in sports who are redshirted their freshman year. There's no disgrace in it, and they don't pretend they're on the varsity. They don't even teach them their plays. You're here to grow stronger. You're here to become more mature. You're here to gain the kinds of physical attributes that will be essential to your succeeding. We have people make All-American who are redshirted. I think if we change our direction, and I've got to get this through my faculty, as you might understand, I think we need to have academic red shirts and have individuals say this is not a disgrace, this is additional preparation. I do think it's a job for the university. Wringing our hands and saying improperly prepared, we can't do anything about it because we just take this niche of education, ignores this involvement in the lives of more and more and more Alaskans. So it's an area that we've done poorly at. There's just no way to describe it. And, you know, Peter Drucker wrote a book about 35 years ago when he was the only one writing on business. Now there's about 6 books a week on business. But Drucker wrote, if 2 good men fail at a job, for God's sake, change the job. And we've got to change the job on remediation.
Senator Bundy?
Well, and I'm very heartened to hear what you said. And I also have some understanding of the challenge you face. When the WAG told me when I left the university, I was leaving a very serious political arena for just the legislature. But what you're talking about is having more teachers and fewer researchers in this area. And yeah. Some of us will certainly agree that and support you in that effort. With that goal in mind, and just increasing numbers obviously may compound your problem rather than help your problem sometimes, it'd be nice to know, you know, if the Alaska Scholars Program could find some way to help you there. I'd be interested to know about your scholarship program and how do academic scholarships compare to athletic scholarships in number. And as a person who's not a fan of red shirts in the traditional sense, but right. Seeming like it certainly could apply in the academic sense.
Well, through the chair, we'll get you much more detailed information on this. But obviously, because we're primarily a Division II school, scholarships for athletics are limited dramatically, and certainly our academic scholarships just dwarf them. I mean, it wouldn't even be close. But I can get you the real data on that. And I would like to talk at length to this committee about the Alaska Scholars Program. I think you need to know a great deal about that, especially since for the first time, the state, through the governor's budget, has at least indicated a desire to get involved. This program is really quite extraordinary in its effect on the numbers of Alaskan youth who decide they want to go to college. I mean, since this program has been in play, we've moved from 40% of our high school seniors wanting to go to college to 50%. I can find absolutely no other reason that could have been the catalyst. I think simply the fact that individuals knowing in a high school that perhaps had not sent somebody to college in 6 or 7 years, that the top 10% of that college or that high school is going to college, has made it believable and made it achievable and made it admirable. And what we've discovered tracing that program is they simply bring people with them, which would all just be goodness if it weren't for being able to track, and we've now been able to do that to some degree at least, because we can only kind of track the people you graduate. Everybody else is just kind of still there and still plugging along. 98% of the graduates still live in Alaska. I mean, this is the kind of highest desirability of what really is the fundamental equation of state universities. It really is a deal with the state that says, I will supplement the cost of education so as to attract our citizenry to attend the university, because we know that they are far more likely to stay in the state and vote in the state, run for office in the state, give to charitable organizations, stay out of jail, and all the wonderful things that are associated with higher education. When you get a 98% of the graduates stay in the state, that's a very, very powerful program. And it probably comes from the fact that, in this case, confusing the university for the state, somebody believed in them and went forward. We do have another thing that is really, really encouraging happening in the terms of in terms of scholarships, and that is last year for the first time, and this year I know an increase is proposed in needs-based scholarships. For a long time, we suffered the ignominy of being the only state in the union that offered neither merit-based nor needs-based scholarships. And with the increase in the scholars program as a possibility, with the increase in the needs-based scholarship as a possibility, we're really, really moving in the right direction, I think, going to see, and just at the right time, because that 80% of need for post-secondary education is going to be exactly the 80% that is needed to prepare Alaskans for the jobs that are coming with the pipeline, which, again, it's going to have, follow that same thing. There's only going to be 23% of them that require a four-year degree. Okay? And there's going to end up being, you know, 77% of them that require post-secondary education, workforce development, certificates, degrees, two-year completions, which has been really the bulk of our growth over the last several years.
Just one follow-up.
Senator Budden?
And all of what you've said, I think, tells me that we're going to have university professors who teach more than one or two classes a week to serve that need. And I wish you well in that challenge, because it's obviously, I think, in some people's view, more prestigious to do research than to be a teacher. So at the community college, we took that label as a high accolade.
Thank you.
And I won't send any more barbs your way.
I agree with you.
Thanks, everybody. We'll look certainly forward to talking with you further about vocational education and how a university gears up for a potential gas pipeline. You can't do it now. You can't train people now because jobs, we're not sure the jobs will be there until the gas line is signed, and how you prepare for that sort of thing. It'll be very interesting to hear. I do want to recognize Representative Greta Gardner. Thank you for being here. She's been here right from the beginning. And I have two people that want to speak, three actually. We'll start with Senator Hoffman, then Senator Stevens, and then Wagoner. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President, I read your letter to the legislature, and then I listened to your comments about the reports of the McDowell Group and Commonwealth North. All of those are all good and well, but nothing in here talks about the role and the success and the need for rural campuses, and I was wondering, every year you come before the Senate, and it's always glaring to me that your report never gives any mention of rural campuses and what they're doing in providing services to the state of Alaska. And I was wondering if you might comment upon that and what you see as the role of rural campuses, and how do you see them growing, and maybe segment that into how they may fit into any capital budget requests.
Through the chair, yes, Senator Hoffman, we have tracked this, and it's certainly not just to respond to you every year. These are a very, very important part of our organization. I've recited some of these data before, but they're very, very powerful. The 12 community campuses, that is everybody but Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau, receive about 11% of our state appropriations. They produce about 25% of the student credit hours, and they serve 28% of our student body. They're very, very important pieces of the institution. As you're very likely aware, there hadn't been construction in the rural areas for about a decade before I got here, and currently you have new facilities in Kotzebue, which I have just visited, Bethel, which I visited, Homer, Kenai, Matsu. We have put some facilities into these areas. Perhaps more importantly, and still in the area of facilities, and frankly, this was through a Title III grant as opposed to state appropriations. Excuse me. We have received an enormous amount of money, which allowed us to invest in distance delivery capacities for these institutions, which came just in time for us to be able to do something we had hoped to do for a very, very long time, and that is to export the, for instance, the nursing program and some of the healthcare programs out to our rural campuses. So the numbers end up being tiny because, as an example, just spent 2 days in Kotzebue, we could only produce two nurses out there. It wasn't because we didn't care about them. It wasn't because they didn't want more. It's because it's limited by certifiable clinical experiences that require a certain number of people being on a ward for a certain amount of time and this sort of thing to get the licensure. So you can only do two at a time. Those two individuals are a very, very important part of the culturally sensitive caregiving in Kotzebue. So that achievement is very, very powerful and compares favorably with the very large number of nurses that we produce in Anchorage, for instance, vis-a-vis the population. So the campuses are constantly being observed. I have twice a year the major administrative units give me an administrative report where they list the amount of funds, the enrollment, the courses offered, and everything else to the community campuses. I'm very much aware of them, and they have accomplished a great deal.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman, Senator Wagoner,
yeah,
and then Senator Hill.
Going back, you mentioned we were talking about what you and I, when we were in college, called bonehead English and bonehead math. Who on your faculty will teach these courses you're talking about? What are we spending to bring a student up to the level that they can become an entry-level student in freshman-level courses?
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, it's a significant amount of money. I don't have it off the top of my head, but again, we can get it for you. These are individuals currently involved, if I can make this change, currently involved in the remediation courses, and I just wanted to change the style of their delivery. I want them to at least consider it. Ultimately, it'll be an academic decision, and I will listen very, very hard to their opinions, and because that's what they do for a living. And if they tell me it won't work that way, then I'm going to have to go along with that. We spend a lot of money doing it. We spend a lot of money on education, as you're well aware. The question is it worth it? And in certainly in my realm of understanding, it's very, very well worth it to have an individual out there with a job contributing to the society as opposed to needing something from the society. But the numbers are significant, no doubt about it. I don't get them exactly what they are.
Senator Wagner?
Well, the reason I brought that up is, of course, at the community college level, there's a little different philosophy. We used to teach those courses with part-time faculty. And I know you got unions now and all that. But we didn't feel, even at the community college level, that we were getting the best bang for the buck. And sometimes the teachers that were full-time faculty weren't really interested in teaching this level of course. They much preferred freshman level and up. So that was the other thing I was going to get to.
Thank you, Senator Wagner. Yes, Wendy Redmond, pleased to see you here. Wendy?
Mr. Chair, my name is Wendy Redmond, Vice President for the Statewide University. And I wanted to answer a little bit of the question that Senator Wagner asked, because I'm very much involved in this right now. And the developmental education is handled a little bit differently at each campus, but the ABE programs for the state are really the, and should be, the sort of the primary source for some of this developmental education. But they've been sort of systemically underfunded for so many years. I understand there's a big request in this year to help bring them up, because they're particularly in Anchorage, where they have huge waiting lists to get in. So if a student can't get in to the ABE program to get the developmental, they do end up on our doorstep. And it's handled a little bit differently at each campus. Some campuses have specific developmental faculty who are really trained in dealing with the pedagogy at that level. Other campuses, they just end up in freshman English and, you know, get weeded out by flunking out. I mean, we're trying hard to try to figure out how to track the students into the right kind of course. But where we've been most successful is where we're in partnership with the adult basic education programs. If we can get them sort of up and running in the communities where they can take that load off of the university, they're more successful. I think, as the president pointed out earlier, they have a different kind of pedagogy than we do at the university, so they're really training them more effectively.
Thank you, Mr. Redmond. Senator, thank you. We have Senator Elton and then Senator Seekins.
Thanks, President Hamilton. I appreciate the presentation, and this is just kind of a list of things that I'm interested in, and I don't expect a response, but just want to put it on the record. I'm interested in kind of that web of contacts and that the university might have with different communities. For example, in the decision-making process, the webs that you might have to the business and the labor community, in the preparation for the university, what kind of web of contacts that you might have with the K-12 community or the Department of Education. And as a follow-up to a concern that was spoken to earlier, I mean, I am assuming, but would want to know more, what the role of research is in attracting good faculty, in economic development for the state of Alaska, and how research effort may support the academic effort of the university. I think these are all kind of concept kind of things, but they're issues that I would like to see us discuss in the future.
I'd be delighted to do that.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Senator Seekins?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. President Hamilton, welcome again to Juneau. I guess I recognize the fact that the university puts out a pretty good product. I've trusted them with my foremost precious commodities, all four of my children attend a University of Alaska. And I think three of my, well, my two son-in-laws played hockey for the best university in the state, UAA. And the, but, and a few other members of my family, and I hope my grandchildren go there as well. You know, I recognize the fact that beyond being a great educational institution, we also, it's a huge economic engine to the state of Alaska, and that those two things dovetail very well in the research that can be done there as far as the education and being a spur to economic development of the state as well. So I appreciate that. Since my kids are still, I got a lot of friends that are college age, and they still come by the house, and you still hear from them from time to time their assessment of the university system. One of the things that does kind of concern me that is there. Let me give you an example. A young lady who moved from Anchorage back to Fairbanks, where her family lives, and then decided that she wanted to go on and finish her degree. In order to be able to finish that degree as timely as possible, she had to go back to Anchorage because the credits that she got in the same program did not transfer well to the Fairbanks campus. It added another year to the process of her being able to get the same degree between the two campuses. And that, I've heard that on a number of occasions, that there's not great portability of credits back and forth among the different campuses in the state, and what that adds to the economic burden of those students that are, and to the sociological burden of those students that want to finish their degree in a timely manner. And I think that, you know, I'm sure that's something that has been brought up on, from time to time, but it does get brought up to me on a regular basis by young people who, and even adults who are trying to finish out their degree and find it as difficult to get that portability. And I think that may be something that, you know, maybe doesn't fall into our purview as an oversight committee, because we do have, we're trying to basically, I think our intent is to do what we can as a legislature to help, to assist in the missions of the university, and to be able to accomplish them by budget and other things, and support that process. But also, just like in my business, when I hear from those people who are not happy, that sometimes means I have additional challenges out there to make my program better. So I'd kind of like to hear, as we go along, how, if you folks think that that's a concern, and how you may propose to try to address some of that, if you would. And then, of course, you brought up a couple of points that I thought were very good. I hire about 120 people. None of those people require a four-year degree. Not a single one. But we prefer them to have an associate degree. As you know, your son went to the University of Alaska in a joint venture with Ford, and got an associate degree in automotive technology and certified in Ford systems, and went into the job market and could get a job anywhere in the United States.
All right.
And a great joint venture in providing that level. And so I really appreciate the fact, as an employer of people, that I prefer to have associate degrees in some of these other areas for my employees, because if you've trained them before I get them, it sure makes my productivity a whole lot better in my business. So I have while I appreciate, you know, the entire mission, I have a big I have a big emphasis on how we, and I know you're working that way, and I think it needs to be more brought up to even to the people of the state working in providing those educational opportunities for the associate degree programs, and as we've already said. So I really want to look at what we can do to assist in that as well in the legislature, and so I look forward to the dialogue, and I'm sure that it's going to be helpful for us as we also become advocates for a strong university system, and occasionally critics where we think it's necessary, where the Joe general public comes and talks to us maybe a little bit more than they come to up on the hill to talk to the folks up there. So I appreciate it.
Okay. To the chair, Senator Seekins, I really just can't wait to bring you the the information and the data on credit transferability. Even understanding that the university is a very dynamic organization and we create courses all the time, drop courses all the time, and this, that, and the other. This is an area that when I first got here was absolutely paramount. I spent more than 2 years tracking down every single one of these things that was brought to me. Didn't pass it off to somebody, said, I want to know, and went through it. This is something that is, I wouldn't tell you it's 100% because they change, and every once in a while I find a Math 107 course that won't accept a credit from a Math 105 course because they think there's more than difference in just the numbering. It is an absolute edict that all of our courses are transferable across the university. What I discovered overwhelmingly, I mean 19 out of 20 cases, is an individual was pursuing a slightly different degree, a slightly different major. And what they discovered was the easiest way is to reduce it to the absurd. So somebody decided they wanted to be a poet, and so they took math for poets. Then suddenly they discovered there was no poet that they could find who made a living, so they decided to become an engineer, and they would transfer their math for poets. You can have credit for it, but it's not going to act toward your degree. And that's what very often, there's a difference between accepting the credit and having that credit count toward a degree. And that's where certainly the academics become very, very certain they need this and this and this and this to get this degree. So the idea that somebody would have to take an entire additional year to pursue the same course strikes me as I'm not knowing all of the data. I'd love to just bring you one, just a quick, it says, okay, there's this many courses involved, and here's how many we can discover currently that we're still arguing about in the faculty senates for compatibility, but it will be several thousand to single digit will be the kind of a thing. Been on top of it. You mentioned maybe this isn't something you should be involved in. I disagree with that. I think this is precisely the kind of thing. It deals with efficiency. It deals with service to Alaskan citizens. And in a state university, the credits absolutely have to be transferable. I absolutely think you should be involved in that as representing people who are about to be thwarted. I mean, if this is so, we've got an individual who's going to have to spend an extra year of their time, never mind their money. I mean, yeah, you should get involved. That's egregious.
Thank you. Further questions or comments? I apologize. Senator Bundy had a meeting he had to go to, and that's always going to be a problem with these meetings. But President Hamilton, I certainly appreciate your comments, and just to give you sort of an idea of where I see us going, so you'll know what the plans are. I'm trying to arrange a meeting fairly soon here with the National Council of State Legislatures staff to talk about national trends and sort of the report card process I'm very familiar with, the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education. They're measuring up nationally program. Certainly a lot of issues have come out here in terms of vocational education, concern about the pipeline and other issues, the scholars program and the governor's intention to increase the size of that, the research arm that has been certainly brought up where we're going in terms of research, economic development is a big issue and how it impacts all the communities of Alaska. The other issues, I think, are their affordability of education, how we compare completion rates of degree programs and the various benefits to the state. I appreciate the information you've given us, the McDowell report, the Commonwealth North report. Those will be very good reading for all of us. I think, President Hamilton, this has been a great start, and I really appreciate your contribution and your willingness to be here with us. And I look forward to us taking the time to delve into some very specific things. If there's nothing further, Thank you very much, President Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we're adjourned.